And you're listening to Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM. I am Fran Storch, and for the next hour, you will be hearing Radio Naturopath, and Ron will be here in just a few. And very exciting this week, you will have 2 hours of us, because for the second hour, we've got a new show coming. It's all about bicycles, and I'm going to let Ron give it a catchy name, but for now, we're going to call it Bicycle Talk. May change, but we'll see. Anyway, so it's so exciting to be here, and I'm happy to talk to you about all kinds of cool stuff. Ron wanted me to share with you something that he found out, he found a cool list about fat, about how important fats and proteins are. So there were 10 things that you probably didn't know about fat. So I'm going to talk about them, and then you are, and then I'm going to debunk, not necessarily debunk them, but give my opinion about them. All right. So, there's a word called lipid. Fats are lipids, but not all lipids are fats. Lipids are a diverse group of biological compounds characterized by their insolubility in water. There are fats, there are phospholipids, there are steroids and waxes, and these are all lipids. Fats, which are also called triglycerides, are composed of fatty acids and glycerol, and triglycerides are solid at room temperature and are called fats, and triglycerides that are liquid at room temperature are oils. So isn't that interesting? So in our bodies, these are very important groups of items. And so things that are actually fats. There are fats that are part of our body. So, for example, you have your essential fatty acids, your omega-3s. What omega-3 means is that you have a long chain of carbons, and there are all these carbons that are hooked together. And you're going to get your first oxygen hooked to that carbon at carbon number 3. That's an omega-3 fatty acid. An omega-6 fatty acid, that's wrong. I'm sorry. It's not your first oxygen. It's your first double bond. Sorry. So you have three carbons. You have a long chain of carbons, right? And the carbons are generally all hooked together by one bond. And then all of a sudden, you'll have a carbon that's hooked together, two carbons that are hooked together by a double bond. And that the first carbon where you see that double bond is going to be, that's where it gets its omega name. So if the first double bond is at carbon number 3, then it's an omega-3 fatty acid. If it's at if it's an omega-6, it's going to be at the 6th carbon. And omega-9, it's going to be at the 9th carbon. So examples of omega-3 fatty acids, are you ready for this? Well, our alpha-linolenic acid, which is a fat that's found in plants, and things like flaxseed oil and borage oil have alpha-linolenic acid in them. People ask, can I get my omega-3s healthfully by just eating plants? Well, you can, but you have to have a well-functioning enzyme in your body called delta-6 desaturase. Delta-6 desaturase, not everybody's delta-6 desaturase functions well. And delta-6 desaturase is an enzyme that will convert a bigger fatty acid to a smaller one that's more useful in your body. And delta-6 desaturase, what it's going to do is it's going to unsaturate a fat so that it's more useful, and it's going to change it into another fat. So alpha-linolenic acid can get converted to EPA and DHA, also known as eicosapentaenoic acid and docosahexaenoic acid, which are essential fatty acids that our bodies directly use. Our bodies don't directly use alpha-linolenic acid. So the interesting thing is that the fats that you eat in plants are not in a form that are used by our bodies. Our bodies have to convert them. And yet they can be useful, and our bodies do use them to an extent. So if you have a well-functioning delta-6 desaturase enzyme, you're going to do well with plant foods. And people and there's some studies on vegetarians that find that they upregulate their delta-6 desaturase enzyme so that they can get essential fats from plant foods more readily, like your alpha-linolenic acid, something that you do find, in fact, in nuts and seeds, and especially flax oil has a lot of alpha-linolenic acid in it. So that's interesting. Then you have other important fatty acids. You have your some omega-6 fatty acids. Now you have linoleic acid. So linoleic acid can be problematic. Linoleic acid is very plentiful in a lot of plant foods. And if you overeat it, it can be converted, unfortunately, to arachidonic acid. And arachidonic acid is a big player in inflammation. There's a system called the prostaglandin system, and the prostaglandin 2 system tends to promote inflammation. Now, you don't want to have zero inflammation in your body. If you had no inflammation in your body, you wouldn't be able to do things like build muscles or fight infection. So you have to have some inflammation going on. But if you have an excessive amount of inflammation, that's going to break down tissue and contribute to ill health. So there's a lot of linoleic acid in polyunsaturated fats, in fats that you find in the store that are generally plant oils, and they're too high in this linoleic acid. And those are going to be things like your just standard vegetable oil, which can have cottonseed oil, soybean oil, or canola oil in them. And those fats have too much linoleic acid in them, and they are going to make you more likely to convert to arachidonic acid. And people eat too much linoleic acid in our culture in general, and that's one of the reasons that we have a lot of inflammation in our bodies. And then we have other plant oils that are pretty good for you. So you have gamma linoleic acid, also known as GLA. And that's found in borage oil and evening primrose oil. And gamma linoleic acid is a precursor to some of the anti-inflammatory systems in our bodies. And you do find that if you take borage oil or evening primrose oil, they can reduce inflammation. One of my favorite things for evening primrose oil is the gamma linoleic acid is a nice anti-inflammatory, and it's very useful for women who are having hot flashes. It's very useful for me who are having hot flashes. And it's not, it's interesting because it doesn't replace estrogen. It just reduces inflammation, and that's its mechanism. So there's an inflammatory response, a vasovagal response that's an acute an acute response that you get a rush of cortisol, and then you get a rush of, flushing, and you get those symptoms. And the gamma linolenic acid can reduce those. What's interesting is that evening primrose oil and borage oil both have a lot of gamma linolenic acid in them, and borage oil, in fact, has more. And yet, evening primrose oil seems to work somewhat better than borage oil, even though there's less gamma linolenic acid in evening primrose oil, and it probably has to do with delivery and cofactors. It's very interesting. And so then there are other things that we talked about here, that lipids, phospholipids are lipids, and they're not exactly fats because they're attached to phosphorus, and phospholipids provide structure to all of the cells in your body. They're in the lining of all the cell membranes in your body. So phosphatidylcholine is one, phosphatidylserine is another, and these things are found in the cell membranes of all of your bodies. So phospholipids are really important because what they are is soaps. That means that at one end they're lipophilic, at the other end they're hydrophilic, which means at one end they're fat soluble and the other end they're water soluble. So what's cool about that is that in the cell membrane, you can take fats into the cell that you need, like, oh, say you need some EPA, some omega-3 fatty acid, so you can build a prostaglandin E1 series so you can reduce inflammation. And on the other hand, you need some vitamin C to get in there because you need to stimulate the immune system, and that's water soluble. So if you have a lining that's both fat soluble and water soluble, different stuff could get in. It's kind of cool. Right? Yeah, very, very nice. So those are your phospholipids. Then you have steroids, and everybody's like, "Roids, dude." And all a steroid is.
Is everybody like that?
Everybody.
Everybody.
All there is a steroid is a compound that has a particular structure in it, in the structure, it's a steroid ring, and it's recognizable. You have to look on. I can't show it to you. So you have to look online, and you'll get to see.
We can't see through the radio.
I know. We might do something about that, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, and we'll, in fact, be able to see through the radio.
Whoa.
Yeah. So we'll see if we can. I'm going to work on that and see if that's something I can do. Anyway.
I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Yeah.
I have an idea.
Well, took.
Okay.
We'll took. Anyway, so steroids are simply a compound that has a steroid ring in it. And in our bodies, all of your reproductive hormones are steroid hormones, and other hormones are steroid hormones. Cortisol is a steroid hormone. And steroid hormones can be catabolic and they can be anabolic. All right. And so when something's catabolic, it breaks tissue down. When it's anabolic, it builds tissue up. So when you think of roids dude at the gym, you're talking about designer drugs that are analogs. That means they aren't exactly the same as your the anabolic steroids in your body. So the anabolic steroids in our bodies would be things like testosterone, including but not limited to estrogen, testosterone. Estrogen and testosterone and progesterone, those are all anabolic steroids. They are steroids that encourage the building of tissue. And when you get designer ones, they are analogs of those hormones. They're usually analogs of testosterone. There's also DHEA, androstenedione. Those are all, they're considered to be anabolic steroids as well. Then you have your catabolic steroids like cortisol, and epinephrine and norepinephrine, and those break tissue down. So cortisol is going to break tissue down so that it's going to put sugar into your blood. It's going to get it from out of your tissues. It's going to convert fat to sugar so you can do stuff that you need to do. And having both of those around is important. And in fact, you have to break your muscle down in order to use it. And then when you break your muscle down, then the anabolic steroids are going to come in and build them back up. So all of these things have to happen. It's not that catabolic steroids are bad. So when you use something like Flonase or you use a steroid to treat your asthma or your nasal respiratory allergies, those are catabolic steroids. Those are steroids that suppress inflammation. They will, and they do, in fact, eat away at your tissue, and they suppress your immune system. So they make things happen less. So when you... You're taking them so that you can suppress your immune system so you don't have the inflammatory response of that's causing you your asthma or your respiratory allergies. But they do suppress the immune system, so you are more likely to get infections. That's just the way that goes. So anyway, so that's what those are steroids. So those are the three kinds of lipids. Fats, then you have fats. Triglycerides are a type of lipid. And so triglycerides are very interesting. When you have triglycerides in your blood that are too high, that's not a good thing. When they get too high, they can get damaged. When you have fats that have double bonds in them, nature doesn't care for double bonds. It tries to reduce the double bonds to single bonds. And how does it do that? By adding electrons to it, adding protons to it. So you add hydrogen to it, and that makes it into a single bond. When you have a fat that has no double bonds, it has all single bonds, it's going to be solid at room temperature, all right? And so that's going to be, your lard and your palm oil and your coconut oil are mostly, they're mostly saturated fat. And, you know, there was that whole thing where everybody's scared of saturated fat.
Yeah.
And that saturated, artery-clogging saturated fat, that's a meme. But it's not true.
But that's not true anymore.
It's not true. Never was true.
It never was. Okay.
Ansel Keys was wrong. They did a study, and they couldn't figure out if it was the carbohydrates or the fats that were causing cardiovascular disease. So they decided to tweak the data to make it look like it was, in fact, it was, in fact, the fats that gave you cardiovascular disease. Now, fats can contribute to cardiovascular disease if they're damaged. It's very hard to damage a saturated fat, and saturated fats provide structure to your body, and they can't be damaged because they're already saturated. The fats that can be damaged are going to be your fats that have double bonds. The more double bonds that they have, the more likely they are to be damaged. And that's where you get your trans fats, and that's when you get your free radical damage. So when you use your vegetable oil, your canola oil, your cottonseed oil, your soybean oil, those are polyunsaturated fats. They have a lot of double bonds. Yeah. And so if you heat them, the double bonds can break apart, and they don't just turn into saturated fats. They turn into free radicals. So you know how you ever smell a fat?
So I'm confused. Double bond. How does it become a double bond?
It becomes a double bond because there's some reaction, some biochemical reaction that happened. Okay, so, all right. So when you have a fat, it's a whole bunch of carbons linked together.
Okay.
So if you have carbon, carbon is an atom.
Right.
Carbon has four places in its outer shell that are possible to bond. All right? So it has four bonding sites in its outer shell.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So when you have a carbon in a fat that is linked to another carbon by a single bond, each of those carbons are contributing one of their bonds.
Okay.
On the other side of them, perhaps they're linked to other carbons on the other side. So now they're each using two bonds. But they're single bonded to other carbons, right?
Okay.
Now there's still two more places on both of those carbons that have to bond to something. Okay, you follow me?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
They are bonded to hydrogen.
Okay. Right.
Okay. Now, if you have two carbons that are bonded together by a double bond, so say they're in a chain,
mm-hmm.
these two carbons are bonded by a double bond.
Mm-hmm.
That means they're each contributing two of their bonds to this bond right here. So now they only have two left. So that means on the other side of them, they're going to be linked to a carbon, and they're going to be linked to one hydrogen. So if you put a hydrogen, if you put a couple of hydrogens in there, hoo-ha, now you have saturated
mm-hmm.
that double bond. So
okay.
saturation is when you add hydrogen to something with double bonds and you saturate it with hydrogen. That's what it means.
Okay.
When something is unsaturated, that means it is not saturated with hydrogen and you have at least double bonds, possibly triple bonds. That's unusual.
Mm.
Something with triple bonds called aldehyde, but you don't usually see that in fats. And the fats that you have that we tend to talk about in our bodies and in our food, they're going to be saturated, monounsaturated, or polyunsaturated. Something that's monounsaturated in it has only one double bond in it. So oleic acid is a monounsaturated fat. It's an omega-9 fat, which means that there's only one double bond in the whole molecule, and it's at the 9th carbon.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's an omega-9 fatty acid, and it's monounsaturated, so there's only one double bond in it. That's what a monounsaturated fat is, only has one double bond. Monounsaturated fats are more stable than polyunsaturated fats because they only have one double bond. Saturated fats are the most stable of all because those double bonds, nature doesn't like a double bond because
okay.
nature would rather have that double bond saturated.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the problem. So when those double bonds break in an unhealthful way, then you have free radicals. You have
so the double bonds are created by an outside source?
You have double bonds created in nature. There are biochemical okay. processes that create mm-hmm. double bonds because that's otherwise when you pick an olive, the olive has oleic acid in it. So
right.
it's created in nature by biochemical processes.
Okay.
And you do have polyunsaturated fats in nature. Canola oil has polyunsaturated fat in it, and nuts and seeds will have some polyunsaturated fat in it. But if they hang around too long, they go bad. That's why. Have you ever tasted a walnut and it tasted bitter?
Yeah.
Walnuts are not supposed to be bitter. If your right. walnut is bitter, it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
That means the oil is rancid. Now that word rancid doesn't just mean stanky.
Stanky, of course.
Yeah.
That's a technical term.
Yeah, technical term.
Right, okay.
The word rancid actually means that the oil, that the double bonds in it have broken down and now you have free radicals. That's what rancid oil is. So if you've, if you have a massage therapist, so massage therapists heed this. You want to find a way to wash your sheets so that you get all of the oil out. Because when you throw them in the dryer, if the sheets start to smell... if they start to have that burned or bitter smell, that's because you're cooking the oils that are in whatever massage oil you're using,
oh.
and it's becoming rancid.
Hmm.
Yeah. So if you taste a walnut that's rancid, you're not supposed to eat it.
Okay.
Yeah, because it has free radicals in it,
okay.
which is another good reason. You're going to encounter free radicals in your life. There are free – when you have inflammation, and by inflammation, I mean those push-ups I just did this morning. I'm creating inflammation.
Right.
And
sure.
so there's always inflammation going on in your body, and mm-hmm. there's always antioxidant going on in your body.
Mm-hmm.
But if you load yourself up with antioxidants, you're going to be less likely to have free radical damage. And how do you do that? Produce, fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the best way to get your antioxidants. And people who don't eat enough produce are not going to get their antioxidants. You're going to get the highest concentration of antioxidants in vegetables and fruit. Leafy greens, nuts and seeds, leafy greens, beans, the darker the bean, the more antioxidants you're going to get. Even grains, if you're selecting a grain, so say you want to eat quinoa, the black quinoa or the purple quinoa is going to have more flavonoids and therefore more antioxidants in it than the white quinoa. So that's something to know. So this is the...
Kind of like red wine, white wine.
Yeah, although white wine still has a lot of antioxidants in it. Right. You're still going to get antioxidants from white wine. I don't know that there's that much difference.
Well, because they're grapes.
There's more anthocyanins in black and red grapes than in white grapes, but there's still a lot of antioxidant activity in white grapes. Hmm. Okay, so here's the second. So we only got through one thing in this list about fats. When our genes determine the amount of fat cells we're born with, by the way, I wanted to announce to you for the summer, this summer only, as far as I know, we're on for 2 hours.
Two whole hours.
Our first hour, we're going to talk about naturopathic medicine and everything you'd like to know about naturopathic medicine. Our second hour, we're talking about fitness and particularly as it relates to bicycles.
Yay,
and we
bicycles.
Have a new host of that show.
Oh, was that me?
Yeah.
I guess that's me. Yes. Okay.
So,
all right, I'll talk about bikes.
Ron gets to have a show this summer for a whole hour, and he gets to talk about bikes and bicycles and whatever he wants to talk about bicycles, and I'm going to engineer it and co-host it and like that.
But we can also talk about how bicycles relate to, naturopathic medicine.
That's up to you.
Health and fitness,
up
too.
To you.
I mean, it's all connected.
We can talk about whatever you want. And this show, just so you all know, this is not going to be restricted to fitness. So when the Tour de France is going, we'll have Tour de France reports. If you want to talk about the Giro d'Italia, we'll talk about that.
Ooh.
If you want to talk about specific topics related to bicycles, we're going to do that. Okay? It's going to be a bicycle show.
All right.
This week, it's going to be called Bicycle Talk. If you want to change the name of it, you can do that next week. But this week, starting at 11 a.m., we're going to have a show called Bicycle Talk.
Why don't we wait until then and we'll talk about it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, the next thing in this interesting list here about fats is that there are billions of fat cells in your body. So this is very interesting. When you are working out, we talk about eating carbohydrates, and we talk about carbohydrates. Your body is expedient. When it wants to use energy, the first source of fuel it's going to go for is carbohydrate because it's easy. But you only have so much carbohydrate. You have the amount of carbohydrate that's floating around in your blood, which you chew through pretty quickly, like inside of an hour. And you have the glycogen that's stored in your liver. And you know, Ron, have you ever hit the glycogen wall?
Oh, you mean bonking?
Bonking, or what do you call it in running? Hitting the wall.
Right. Hitting the wall.
Right. So the thing is, that sensation is when you've chewed through your glycogen stores, and for whatever reason, you haven't switched over to fat burning. So one of the things you want to do is train your body to burn fat as a fuel. And so when it talks about billions of fat cells, we have so much stored energy as fat. And if you can train your body to burn fat as a fuel, you can go for a lot longer. So that's one of the goals. So when we talk about the billions of fat cells in our bodies, we have endless stores of energy around fats. So here's the next thing that this is interesting. It says, whether you eat a low-fat diet or high-fat diet, the percentage of calories from dietary fat consumed. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready for this.
Not linked to disease. So no matter how much fat you eat, not linked to disease. As it relates to developing cardiovascular disease and stroke, it is the type of fat you eat, not the percentage of calories of fat. How many times have I said that, right? It's true. So this is the deal. Saturated fat is not going to give you cardiovascular disease. For the most part, monounsaturated fat is not going to give you cardiovascular disease. Hydrogenated fat and trans fat are more likely to give you cardiovascular disease. Why? Because they have more free radical liability. It's the free radicals that are going to give you cardiovascular disease. Why? Because they're unstable. They have these free radical electrons floating around. They want to stabilize themselves, and they want, and they're going to take the electrons from your arteries, and they're going to cause arterial damage. And once they take the electrons, the molecules that the electrons have been taken from are going to borrow it from the next molecule over, which is going to cause a chain reaction of damage. Now your body sees that your artery is damaged. It's going to send platelets, calcium, and cholesterol to that area. It's going to patch it up because it's trying to fix it. And if it does it too much, you get blockages. So it's about the trans fat. So if you eat a high-fat diet and your diet is completely saturated fat, monounsaturated fat, healthful polyunsaturated fats that are not rancid, you're set. You're not going to get cardiovascular disease. I mean, I eat a lot of fat. I mean, I use a tracker, and it tells me I've gone over my fat content for the day, and I'm looking at it going, but I took MCT oil, I ate avocados, I ate a bunch of walnuts and almonds, and you're going to tell me that I ate too much fat? That's silly. You know, now, if I ate a lot of fried food where I ate, you know, French fries that were deep fried in polyunsaturated oil, that would be a problem. And if the fat was coming from that. So this is what it's saying. Very exciting. All right. Did you know that fat is composed of adipocytes? Yippee. Adipocytes.
What's an what?
Adipocyte.
An adipocyte.
Yeah.
Yes,
well,
dear. What is that?
It's a fat cell. Adipose okay. means fat. Cyte means cell.
Okay.
It's a fat. It's Latin for fat cell. That's like saying fat is grasa. That's like, I just said it in Spanish. Well, fat is adipocyte. I just said it in Latin. Yippee. So there is brown adipose and white adipose, or brown and beige adipose. Beige adipose is genetically different from both brown and white. Burns calories to release energy like brown adipose. Brown and beige fat get their color from the abundance of blood vessels and presence of iron containing mitochondria. So there's going to be more mitochondria in your brown and beige adipose, which means it's more biologically active. Your white fat is just kind of sit there and insulate you. All right. So the other thing is that fat tissue produces hormones that protect against obesity. So adipose tissue acts as an endocrine organ, and it generates hormones that influence metabolic activity, which is really cool. So one of the hormones is adiponectin, which controls fat metabolism and increases your insulin sensitivity. So if you're if you have good levels of adiponectin, you're going to help to regulate your body fat better. If you starve yourself, your adiponectin is going to go down because your body's going to try to preserve your fat tissue. And that's one of the problems with extreme dieting, that you reduce your adiponectin levels and that then you lower your metabolism. All right. Fat cell numbers retain constant in adulthood. Studies have revealed that the number of fat cells in your adults remain constant overall, regardless whether you're lean or obese or lose or gain weight. They swell when you gain fat and shrink when you lose fat. The number of fat cells in an individual in adulthood is set during adolescence. So you got what you got, regardless of how big you are. And I'm assuming that some people have more fat cells than others. So if you have less fat cells, you're going to tend to be less, less overweight. But the fat cells will fill up with fat when they have to store fat. Interesting. Fat helps with vitamin absorption. So if you need to absorb your fat-soluble vitamins, it's a good idea to eat them with fat. So your A, D, E, and K are all fat-soluble. So eating them with fat is a good idea. If you buy a vitamin D supplement, it's a good idea if it's in oil. So I have nice vitamin D supplements that I offer people that are in olive oil. And that's a great idea. Quite honestly, it's probably even better if it's in a little bit of, if it's in fish oil, because fish oil is an animal fat and vitamin D is found naturally in animals. It's not found naturally in plants in general, except for algae. There's some algae that make vitamin D. You can produce vitamin D from algae, because I do have some vegans in my practice who, and we get them vitamin D that's been produced from algae. So if you are taking fat-soluble vitamins, it's a good idea to take them along with some fat. And if you eat fatty foods with healthful fat in them, they're going to have some fat-soluble vitamins in them. Fat cells have a 10-year lifespan. On the average, this I didn't know, they live for 10 years before they die and are replaced. But they replace when they die, you get more. The rate at which fat is stored and removed from adipose tissue is about a year and a half for an adult with normal weight. Fat storage and removal rate is balanced, so there's no net increase in fat. For an obese person, the fat removal rate decreases and storage rate increases. Fat storage and removal rate for an obese person is 2 years. So it's longer for a person who's obese than someone who is not obese. Even so, your body, you're at a net number of fat cells. Your fat cells die, you replace them. So I'm assuming I have more fat cells than you. Whatever.
Oh, well, you know, you're a girl.
I'm a girl. Yeah, that's the reason.
Yeah, well, it is.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that's not very scientific, but it really is. Yeah. You know, women have more fat cells than men have. They always will.
And all women have more fat cells than you.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm an unusual candidate here. I am what I am.
And which brings us to number 10, that women have a higher percentage of body fat than men.
Well, follow.
Women have a greater percentage of body fat than men because we need more body fat to maintain menstruation and prepare for pregnancy.
Absolutely.
And then when we're menopausal, we still need the fat because we're not making estrogen from our ovaries anymore. So we need that. So your fat will make hormones for you.
Mm.
So that's why, you know, so ladies, if you're having trouble losing that body weight that you're gaining, you're finding you're holding onto a bit more weight during menopause and it's harder to lose, there's a reason for that. Because your estrogen is downregulated, it's going to downregulate your hormone sensitive lipase. It's going to be a little harder to hold onto the fat. And fat does nice things for you. I mean, as much as we wish we were slender, fat does cool stuff for you. It makes estrogen, which maintains your bone density. It maintains other functions, gives you nice skin. It makes it so you have less vaginal dryness. And if you do have vaginal dryness anyway, talk to me. That's a thing we could talk about because we could fix that. When you're pregnant, you have to have more body fat because you have to maintain your estrogen and progesterone. So that's important. So average women have around 25 to 31% body fat, while average men 18 to 24. So we have more body fat. So there you go. So there's a whole bunch of interesting facts that you wanted to know about fat. So tell me, do we have anything did anybody ask any questions?
Well, Cassandra just called from Willimantic.
Very good.
And Cassandra would like to have you touch base, about cholesterol issues. She's on that border of high cholesterol. She's concerned about it. She wants to know if there's any natural medicines or natural ways of dealing with the high cholesterol. And I touched base with her that you're probably going to spout about triglycerides on this one.
This is a good segue because we were just talking about fat and we've segued into cholesterol. So one of the things you have to remember is cholesterol in no way is the devil. Cholesterol is a very important compound in your body. If you did not have cholesterol, you would die, which makes me really leery of this practice of giving people these drugs that lower cholesterol. They think that cholesterol is the culprit in cardiovascular disease, where there are some good studies that show really the only real candidates who are protected by taking drugs that lower lipids are middle-aged men who've already had a heart attack. Mm-hmm. Everybody else, not really. Just lowering cholesterol is kind of missing the mark. They tend to do it because people don't do the things that will help you lower your cholesterol.
Ah.
But lowering your cholesterol is not, high cholesterol is not in and of itself a bad thing. High cholesterol is demonstrating that there's something wrong going on. If your cholesterol is high, it's because your body is trying to repair your arteries, and so what you're doing stuff in your life to make it so that you're overstoring, you're overstoring starches and sugars, mm-hmm. and your body, and there's some free radical damage going on in your blood vessels that your body is needing to fix, and so. The issue is not, you don't lower cholesterol by actually blocking the production of cholesterol. Your body doesn't just make stuff just to make it because it's fun or make it just because it's bad, that we're going to lower your cholesterol so low. And this is the benchmarks for what cholesterol numbers should be. I can't believe how low they're supposed to be. And the idea that you have to get them so low so they're in the low double digits makes no sense, because how do you then shore up your cell membranes? If every cell membrane in your body has cholesterol in it and you drop the cholesterol way down, how are you going to have healthy cell membranes? It just doesn't make sense.
Okay.
So
what are the problems of having too low of a cholesterol?
Are you ready?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I asked questions.
How about low sex drive? How about cognitive difficulties? Difficulties with memory.
Oh, terrible.
And cognition and learning stuff.
Oh, that's awful.
How about mood and depression?
That's not good.
How about not being able to heal yourself after you had a workout? And if you used your muscles break down and they can't rebuild themselves. Anytime you, how about poor wound healing? All kinds of stuff, because cholesterol is present in every cell membrane in your body, it's very high in fatty tissues. And some of the fattiest tissue in your body, of course, is going to be your adipose tissue. But the other super fatty tissue in your body is your nervous system, your central and peripheral nervous system. Super high in fat. Your brain, did you know that you're a fathead?
Oh, yes. I've been called that many times.
Yeah, but so am I.
Yeah.
And so are all of you
so
listening.
Right.
And I don't mean that as an insult, that your brain
only in the nicest way.
In the nicest way. And in fact, the more of a fathead you are, the better off you were. So saying someone is a fathead could be seen as a compliment.
Well, I'm feeling much better now.
Yes. Well, so DHA, docosahexaenoic acid, is very high in nervous system tissue. And if you have a lot of DHA in your brain, you're going to have better cognition and you're going to have better thought processes. So that's why eating fish and fish oil, and that's where you get your DHA.
Right.
And that's really good for you. And when people are having cognitive issues, we might give them just straight up fish oil. We might give them just a high DHA product. So just know that essential fatty acids, taking fish oil, can make you smarter. So
right.
Anyway, so cholesterol is part of the cell membranes. It's a fat, and it's part of the cell membranes of all of the cells in your body. And if you don't have enough of it, your nerve tissue can't function right. You're not going to have good communication among the nerve cells in your body. You're not going to be able to store memories. You're not going to be able to learn stuff. You're not going to have good communication with nervous tissue throughout your body. Okay, so when your doctor goes and tells you that you have high cholesterol, somebody comes in, my doctor sent me here, I have high cholesterol. So I have to look at what they're talking about. And you've heard me talk about before, whether you have large, buoyant, or small, dense LDL. If your LDL is small and dense, it's more likely to stick to the inside of your blood vessels and cause blockages. And it's going to be more likely to be small and dense if you're overstarching and you're not exercising.
You're
overstarching and eating too much starch and sugar.
So it's the eating, moving thing. Again,
it's always coming back
down to the eating, moving thing.
It totally is. And so
go for a walk. Get out, move,
right.
Enjoy the weather. Beautiful morning this morning, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
very
it's
nice.
Very nice. Very,
I think we're
nice.
Going to see definitely high 60s, possibly low 70s today. Mm-hmm. So that'll be really nice.
Yeah, it was a gorgeous morning for a walk. We had a nice little 4-mile walk this morning.
Oh,
very
that's
nice.
Great.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah, it's good.
So lipids, so your cholesterol, when you go to the doctor, when you go to most MDs, they're going to measure, they're going to do a lipid panel on you. And they're going to measure your LDL, your low-density lipoprotein, your HDL, your high-density lipoprotein, your total cholesterol, and your triglycerides. And by the way, your total cholesterol is not just the sum of your HDL plus LDL. There's one more number that goes into that, and that's your VLDL.
What is a VLDL?
Very low-density lipoprotein.
Very low density.
Yeah, so you have very low density, you have low density, and then you have high density.
So if the low densities are kind of bad boys, right?
Kind of, sort of, not really.
Kind of, sort of, not really. Then they're, the very low
they've
densities.
They've been well maligned.
Okay.
See, the thing is, we are very judgmental about cholesterol. We have been taught to believe that cholesterol is bad. I'm here to tell you it is not. I'm also here to tell you that triglycerides are not bad. It's just if you... But when I say if you have too many triglycerides in your blood, it's not good for you, I'm not saying to you triglycerides are bad for you. If you had no triglycerides in your blood, you wouldn't have a source of fat
right.
to to do stuff in your body. I mean, you have to have some triglycerides. If you had zero triglycerides in your blood, that would be bad. But it's better if your net triglycerides floating around in your blood is in the double digits. That's a good thing. And you
so
and
there
I,
is a magic number, so to speak. Of
kind of
where
a magic
you should
number.
Be, kind of in a range.
The
right?
issue with triglycerides is that they are prone to damage. They are prone to free radical damage because they're running around in your blood. You know what goes on in your blood?
Not really.
Boy, oh boy, all kinds of things.
I'll bet.
All kinds of actions and reactions and building up and breaking down and inflammation and correction and antioxidants and oxidation and this, that, and the other thing. Mm-hmm. Tons of stuff goes on in your blood. So there's free radicals around just from, because if I run from here to there, I just had to break down some triglycerides and sugar in my blood in order to get the energy into my cells so I can do that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I created free radicals. Every time you burn something, you're going to create free radicals.
Right.
So those free radicals are going to be around. Now, you have oxidative system, antioxidant systems that are going to help that. And if you just ate a whole mess of cherries, then the anthocyanins in the cherries are going to help to calm down that oxidation as well.
Mm-hmm.
However, you're still going to get some oxidation. And if your triglycerides see it, they're going to get damaged.
Yeah.
The more triglycerides you have, the more damaged triglycerides you can have. Triglycerides are very easily damaged, and they're going to run around your blood, and they're going to cause free radical damage to your arteries. They're more likely to give you cardiovascular disease than their cholesterol is, because the cholesterol is just a substrate. Your cholesterol is not used in the same way. It's not as easily damaged. It can, but it can be. Because you can have oxidized cholesterol. Your cholesterol can be damaged well. And oxidized LDL is a problem. And that is something you can measure, and it is not usually measured by your MD. But there, you can order a test for oxidized LDL. And it's more, that's a more important figure than what your total LDL. Like if you have high LDL, say your LDL is 150, and none of it is oxidized and it's all large and buoyant, you don't have a problem. If you have low LDL, your LDL is 97, or let's say, 75, but it's all small and dense, and it's all oxidized, you have a way worse problem. That's why you'll see people with low cholesterol get heart attacks, because you're not paying attention to what kind of cholesterol it is.
I see.
So the biggest thing to lower cholesterol...
Bring us back to the LDLs not being the good guys, but kind of more the bad guys.
I still say that they are maligned, and they are incorrectly maligned.
Mm-hmm.
That what you want to do is you want to be in balance. You want your LDL to be large. And if your LDL is large and buoyant, it's not only is it not going to hurt you, it's going to help you. Because what is LDL? Low density lipoprotein is a lipoprotein that's taken from your liver and brought out to your body for use. You need that cholesterol in all of your cells in your body, so the LDL is carrying it to all of those places. It's not a bad thing. The HDL is then going to go and balance it out, and it's going to take the extra LDL and bring it back to the liver for you so you can make stuff in your liver, like hepatocytes, and then use it to make things like liver cells, and then make things like, guess what? Steroid hormones.
Okay.
All right? Like your estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, androstenedione, DHEA.
Things you need in your body to do things.
Yes.
Right.
Right. So,
So how do you know if you have fluffy and buoyant LDLs?
You take a test.
Okay.
You go to your friendly local doctor who is on board with such things, and they order it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there's a special blood test for this.
Yeah, you order, any doctor can order it for you. Whether they will or not is a question, but any doctor can order it. I would order it. Your naturopaths are generally into that. Integrative MDs will order it. Depending on the MD you go to, they might be interested in ordering things like large buoyant LD. It's a lipoprotein fractionation test. Then there are other lipoproteins that are very important that they don't talk about, like lipoprotein PLA2. And lipoprotein PLA2 is a very specific marker for cardiovascular inflammation.
So I walk into my doctor.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
Which I know it's you, but that's okay. I walk into my doctor and I say, when you do my blood work, I would like a what?
I would like a test for
a density test for my cholesterol?
It's going to depend on the doctor who you ask, because quite honestly, no offense if you're an MD who doesn't know this, not all MDs are going to know what you're talking about.
Okay. All right.
So One thing you can do, you can ask for a cardio IQ test from Quest Diagnostics. You can ask for Berkeley Health. They do it as well.
Okay.
Cleveland Health, I believe, also has a test where they do those particular tests. But the specific tests are going to be lipoprotein fractionation. Mm-hmm. You want to know your lipoprotein little a. You want to know your lipoprotein PLA2. And you want to know your apolipoprotein, an apolipoprotein evaluation.
But if I, as a layman here, mm-hmm. walk in and ask for something, what would I ask for?
Like I said, well, again, you shouldn't be expected to have an extensive knowledge of this.
Sometimes you may don't have ask, to, you don't get.
So what you may have to say to your doctor, if it's hard for you to remember this, you say, I would like a test of the buoyancy of my LDL. If you could remember the term lipoprotein fractionation, that might be something to ask for. Or if you're talking about Quest, you can ask for cardio IQ. You want the special cholesterol test, an in-depth cholesterol test. And if you're really not sure, just ask me. I can also post it. If you would like, what I'll do is I will post the different tests on Facebook, okay? So if you like me at Fran Stinch, if you like me on Facebook at Fran Storch ND, naturopathic physician, radio naturopath, today I will post the different tests to order from your doctor if you're interested in getting more in-depth information about your lipoproteins. Because for me to say it on the air, it's going to be hard for you to remember, and there are a number of labs that do it. And then there are the actual specific tests, which you can ask for, because depending on where you go get your blood drawn, they use different subcontractor labs. So, you know, if you just write on your test, if a doc just writes on your test lipoprotein little a, they're going to pass it on to, say, ECHN. Say you're in Manchester and you're going to ECHN. ECHN is going to look at it, and they're going to send it on to whatever subcontractor they use, to their favorite subcontractor, and they'll do your lipoprotein little a for you. If you ask for a specific lab, they might be less inclined to pass it on, or if they do, it might be considered an out-of-network lab. So what you need to know is the actual companies that do the tests, and then you also need to know the names of the specific tests. And I'm going to give those to you on my Facebook page so you don't have to remember them. How's that? Okay? So that'll work for you. Good. All right. So if you came to me or a naturopathic physician in general saying, my doc says I have to lower my cholesterol, we're going to look at the numbers you already have. And depending on who it is, we are likely to want to run one of these advanced cholesterol screens for you. We're going to want to run, you know, one of the companies that uses the lipoprotein screening. We're going to want to do that, and we're going to give you something to do to help you modify how those are. So I have to tell you, anything that tends to raise blood sugar tends to give you a poorer lipid profile. So as I told you, when you have small dense LDL, they're more likely to stick inside in between the cells in your blood vessels and cause blockages. If you eat too much starch and sugar, you're more likely to have small dense LDL. And so the answer to that is you have to reduce your starch and sugar. I'm also going to tell you that modern wheat is very high in a starch called amylopectin A, and it's also high in wheat germ agglutinin, both of which raise your blood sugar and contribute to insulin resistance. If you get away from modern wheat, your triglycerides and your triglycerides will tend to go down, and your LDL will more likely to become large and buoyant. Cardio exercise also eats up your triglycerides and increases the size of your LDL. So cardio exercise is really important. If you're not getting regular cardio exercise, it's going to be very hard to lower your or improve your lipid profile. And just plain, if you're overstarching, if you're eating too much starchy food, your cereal for breakfast, sandwiches for lunch, pasta for dinner, pizza 3 or 4 times a week, if that's your life, that it's going to be really hard for you to lower your cholesterol. And taking the drug doesn't really take away the problem because you still have the problem that you're causing inflammation by a stressful lifestyle and also by eating too much starch and sugar and forcing your body to have more insulin around. Insulin, remember, causes inflammation. Insulin is, like I told you before, it's a traffic director. It will direct sugar to get into your cells. If it can get in, if there's too much sugar around, it will stop the insulin. It will stop the sugar from getting into the cells, and it will direct it to be stored as fat. So insulin also moderates inflammatory compounds. So you're going to have more inflammation if you have damage to cells. And by damage to cells, it can be as simple as you did push-ups. That's considered damage to cells. Your body has to go and then repair the muscles that you damaged by doing those push-ups. And then you get bigger, stronger muscles, and you make more muscle cells to support that level of effort. So you get insulin participates in that. So insulin, depending on what the environment is, can be deleterious or it can be helpful. Insulin, so saying that insulin is bad for you, it's not bad for you. Saying cholesterol is bad for you is misguided as well. It's when cholesterol rises, it usually means something else is going on. And in naturopathic medicine, one of the basic principles of naturopathic medicine is treat the cause. You have to take a step back and look at what's causing that rising cholesterol because your body is making that cholesterol so it can repair something. So when you take fish oil to lower your cholesterol, what you're doing there is you're providing essential fats to reduce inflammation. You reduce inflammation, there's less damage to tissues, there's less need to have that high cholesterol, so cholesterol tends to go down. So it's indirect. Triglycerides as well. When you take fish oil, again, now you have a source of essential fats. The essential fats are going to reduce inflammation. And again, you're going to have less insulin activity, so your triglycerides are going to go down. You take antioxidants, you're going to tend to have less damage to blood cells. So your body is, or blood cells are the insides of your arteries. So your body's not going to feel the need to make as much cholesterol. It will come down that way. When you take statin drugs, what statin drugs do is they block an enzyme that helps you make cholesterol. I don't think that's a really good idea because your body's making the cholesterol for a reason. If you take red yeast rice, which is a common supplement that people take to help lower their cholesterol, red yeast rice has statins in it. It has lovastatin. That's how it works. So when you if you think you're doing something good for yourself by taking red yeast rice instead of a statin, it's no different. So the way to lower cholesterol is not to think about lowering cholesterol. It's to think about what's going on in your body and your life that got the cholesterol up in the first place and take care of that. That's really the best way to do it. So the way to do it is to reduce stress, because stress will raise your cholesterol. Raises your cholesterol. Why? Because you have more inflammation when you have stress. You have more sugar in your blood when you have stress. And you have more cortisol around, which breaks down tissue. You have more tissue breakdown, your body's going to raise your cholesterol to repair the tissue. So you reduce stress. You reduce starch and sugar because starch and sugar get converted to triglycerides, which damage your blood vessels. Starch and sugar increase the presence of insulin, which increases inflammation. So you reduce starch and sugar, and that will help you lower your cholesterol. And then you eat a lot of foods that are high in fiber and high in antioxidants. The fiber is going to sweep out excessive food in your body, excessive bad compounds in your body, and the antioxidants in the produce are going to help repair tissue so the cholesterol doesn't have to run and do it and patch things up. So that's how you lower your cholesterol.
And you start a routine of movement.
Yes, and you get exercise. That's correct.
Right.
You get exercise.
And you fit it in. You figure it out. That's all. You have to just figure it out. You get up in the morning, you brush your teeth. That's a routine, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you kind of have to look at it like that. Okay, part of my routine is I get up in the morning, I go in the bathroom, I brush my teeth. Okay, I look at the temperature, I see what it is outside, I get dressed, I step out the door and go for a walk.
So there's something that happened very recently, and we only have 7 more minutes to talk about naturopathic medicine.
Although we could run over. It's okay.
We can.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
Because what happened was the Academy of Science finds that GMOs are not harmful to human health.
Oh, good Lord, who paid them off?
Right. That was my first thought.
Yeah, that sounds
Dr.
like...
Oz was on the Today Show today, which is very interesting. So they asked Dr. Oz about it, and it was clear, as I was watching Matt Lauer interviewing Dr. Oz, it was clear to me that Dr. Oz was not entirely comfortable supporting GMOs. He was saying, yes, the study came out. It was a good study. It shows in this study, it shows that GMOs are not harmful, but it was also, he was also kind of saying it's also important to get your good information, and that there are a lot of states that are putting GMO labels on things, and if people are not comfortable with GMOs, here's what you can do. So Dr. Oz was kind of funny. He was playing both sides of the fence.
So who owns NBC?
Right. Exactly. So who's paying for that? Would be my question.
Who owns NBC?
And who owns Dr. Oz?
And who owns Dr. Oz?
Dr. Oz is, well, because it was very funny, because at the end of the interview, Matt Lauer said, check your local listings if you want to watch Dr. Oz, because he's not on NBC.
Oh, I see.
Okay. But yet they're tapping Dr. Oz as an expert. It was very interesting.
That's interesting. Yeah.
So anyway, I would like to read more about, I want to read more about what the study said, and look at what they're saying and who's saying it before I weigh in on it. I still maintain that there has to be some issue when you genetically modify plants in a way that was not intended by nature, and then you have me or cattle that I'm going to eat consuming these GMO products, and these GMO products now go into the digestive systems of these animals, and you have discussion between the GMO corn, for example, and the microbiota, the microflora, the good bacteria in your body, and they exchange genetic information, and now you have Frankengenes in your microflora. What's that going to do to the nature of your microflora? Because one of the things that we see, saying that there's no GMOs are not harmful to human health. Does that mean that those movies that questioned it, that were controversial, they're just wrong? Because the thing is, you can get a study to say what you want. And it's like the whole vaccination controversy. Vaccines are seen as overly good for you, and vaccines don't cause autism. What they really mean is that vaccines don't cause autism in most people. But in some people, they do. Because when they did the studies, there's a certain number of people that are harmed by vaccines. And there may be an overwhelming proportion of people who are not harmed by vaccines and are in fact helped by them. But there's going to be a small proportion of people that are. And there's a proportion of people that, you know, and what they do is they discount these parents who say, okay, my kid got a vaccination, and within a week, the kid stopped talking. And you hear that over and over and over. So you're going to discount that? Nobody wants to study that because nobody wants to put in the money for that. The organizations with the most money are the ones who are going to pay for the studies, and they're going to pay for the studies, and they're going to overwhelmingly tell you these things are safe.
Well, they're going to pay for the studies to be told in their words.
Where they're going to put a spin on it.
They're going to put a spin on it. Exactly.
And you can have a study that can be... The facts stand, but one person, overwhelmingly, vaccinations do not cause autism. You can say overwhelmingly that's true because in 95% of people they don't, but maybe in 5% of people they do. So study shows, or you could also spin it this way, 5% of people show that vaccinations cause autism. That's a spin that it does cause it, but it's a very small percentage. So I'm not saying yay or nay. I'm not weighing in on that topic specifically, but GMOs, there are those who say that there are problems with them and who are people who are not comfortable with them. And then this study is saying that overwhelmingly that it's that GMOs do not harm human health. So I have to look at the study, and I have to get more information about it, and then I'm going to report back to you next week.
So guess who owns NBC?
Who?
Comcast.
Right. So, okay.
Comcast.
Fine.
Who advertises on Comcast? What does Comcast do to support itself
besides
selling cable television to the masses.
It sells advertising.
Across the U.S. It sells advertising.
Sure.
How much of it do you think is food and drug related?
Oh, lots.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's true. And so in any of those shows.
There you go.
And any of those shows, Big Pharma pays a lot of money to advertise on those stations.
Big Pharma pays a lot of money to keep people quiet.
Yeah, that may be as well.
Yeah, well.
But it's interesting because overwhelming, the food industry is using 90-odd% of your products in the supermarket have genetically modified organisms in them. So they want you to believe that they're safe, so you'll buy them.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so we'll talk about that next week. All right. So we're going to take a little break for a couple of minutes. You're listening to 91.7 FM, WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch. And this has been Radio Naturopath for the last hour. And we're going to magically go away. And suddenly, you'll have a new show on. And it's going to be called, for today, Bicycle Talk. And Ron's going to talk about bicycles. And we'll be back with more Radio Naturopath.